Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara,
and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Minutes after 8. Colleen's godfather coming on. How about that little intro?
I love it, man. That's awesome.
Colleen. Colleen now is learning how to play water polo.
Oh, I was hoping she'd go that way.
she's becoming the athlete of the family.
Now you can start calling her fish.
Yeah. She went out for swimming, and now they've flipped her into water polo, and she's learning how to, what did she call it? Washing machine or something like that, the way water polo players tread water. And then she was talking about how they grab your suit when you're going for the ball. They'll be swimming, and they'll grab your suit, and they yank you back. And she goes, it made me angry until I started doing it, too. And yeah.
That's what I was going to say. Oh, man, you can punch and pull pants down, and it's all underwater.
Yeah, nobody sees it. So it's pretty funny. Yeah, she doesn't have the good sense to say, no, I don't want to do that. Hey, do you want to play this? Do you want to play that? Sure, I'll play it. As always, it's good for you. I was talking a little bit ago. I'm sure you woke up and sad news. We were just talking about it last week when somebody emailed and asked, what your favorite cooking programs, but the news that Anthony Bourdain is dead, and, sad, sad day.
Yeah, very much so. He was a piece of work, and he pretty much caught it as he saw it. Other celebrity chefs he thought were pusses. He said so. He was very, very cool. And his book, Kitchen Confidential, was what he wrote about the underbelly of our business. It was tremendous. So I made all my cooks read it for a few years. I bought copies for them. It's a good book called Kitchen Confidential.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to know how we came up in the business. Anthony Bourdain, myself. Now it's all touchy-feely in the kitchen.
As it is in life.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
No.
He's very adamant about the sexual harassment in the restaurant business. But he didn't mince words. Chefs throw things at him. You know, I had pots and pans thrown at me in Europe and with hot water in it. And I mean, you know, one guy threw a big one of those, you know, 18-inch spoons that you stir monster pots with, and I caught it and handed it back to him.
Yeah, take that,
it pissed him off so much he just walked away from me.
You think?
All I could do.
But you know what? You know, we've got like, it's all like, oh, that made me feel so bad. You know, well, the most important thing in life isn't your feelings there, princess. You know, I hate to be the one that breaks the news, but there's bigger things out there. And if you can't take an ass chewing, now I don't mean, you know, somebody who's abusive, but I grew up getting my ass chewed, you know?
Both of us did.
Yeah, and I don't know. I saw a story this morning that said, it's from the Omaha World Herald. The last story I read that the Omaha World Herald broke was they broke the original story about that the Marines identified in the Iwo Jima flag raising were improperly identified. That's the last time I've seen the Omaha World Herald. Anyway, according to the CDC, Center for Disease Control or something like that, suicides increased by more than 30% since 1999 in half of the states of the United States of America. And
It says in the paper this morning, suicide rate saw biggest rise in U.S. in North Dakota.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
More than a decade of steadily rising rates have made suicide the nation's 10th leading cause of death, and one of only three causes of death, including Alzheimer's disease and drug overdoses, that are increasing in the U.S., according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. A report that examines trends in suicide at the state level from 1999 to 2016, the CDC said suicide rates have increased in nearly every state. In half of the states, the agency found the rate rose more than 30%. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, it's just unbelievably tragic. And the soldiers coming back from overseas, it just breaks my heart. And you're hoping that we can, get a handle on this stuff. It's just,
yeah, but you know, Kim, you know what's weird is that we talk about it more than we've ever talked about it in our history. There's more programs out there and more people willing to help you than we've ever had in our history. Yet the number continues to rise. And this week specifically.
Yeah.
I
don't know what the answer would be. I'm not trained that way. But
yeah, I don't. It just seems that when there's so much awareness, there's so many people willing to help, and even today you have, in just this week, an example, you have two incredibly high visibility, wealthy Americans.
Yes.
Who have access to any kind of help that they would choose, choose to take their own lives, and so I don't know how you rescue people like that who know that they can get help, and who can't seem to find their way. I don't know what else can you do, except forcibly. Do something, and we all know that's not. So I don't know. It's just I don't know.
I don't know. I'm at a loss. I mean, I just back in California when I was becoming changing my way from chinos and penny loafers to long hair and Levi's 501s, in the Veterans Hospital, next to Palo Alto in, Menlo Park. They were using LSD to treat post-traumatic stress disorder. And I don't know whether it worked or not, but that was one of their treatments. So, I just don't know what they can do, but I know they're sure trying.
Yeah, you know what? And they're still doing those experimentations, and I just find it hard to believe that. And some of those drugs are so powerful and so addicting that how does that Oh, and again, you're treating symptoms. I read a lot about it. I think it's pretty rough.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty rough. I think this would surprise most people. According to the CDC, And it gives you it gives you a little bit of insight into suicide. But if you look at the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, the top 10 suicide rates are number one in the nation is Montana, 25.9. Suicide death rate, okay, and I think that's per thousand, maybe. Alaska, 25.8, Wyoming, 25.2, New Mexico, 22.5, Utah, 21.7, Idaho, 21.4, Nevada, 21.4, Oklahoma, 20.0, Colorado, 20.5, South Dakota, 20.2, West Virginia, 19.3, and North Dakota, 19.0. That is the top, that's about the top 12. The state with the most suicides in it is California. Their rate is 10.5%. There was 4,294 suicides in California over the course of the last 12 months. All the big states follow. Texas, Florida, Pennsylvania, Ohio. New York doesn't come in till like sixth, which is kind of interesting given the size of the population of the state of New York. So, yeah, I don't. Again, I, you know, people can talk about the root issues. Some will say, what's interesting is that in many, when you look at the rates, high rates of, you know, Native Americans in states like Montana, Alaska, Wyoming, and New Mexico, you know, which are the top four, and which highlights the problems of alcoholism on reservations. And things like that, alcoholism on reservations and things like that. And so that's one of the footnotes to this text message. Mike, what about the – Mike, nobody calls me Mike. Mike, what about the lowest rates? What states are the top five in terms of lowest rates? Yeah, interesting. Lowest rates are New Jersey, New York, Massachusetts, Maryland, and Connecticut, followed by California and Illinois. So those are, a lot of those are pretty high population states, although Connecticut is not. So those are the lowest rates. And then, there was one more I was going to say. Anyway, so so what's the answer when you have so much awareness out there?
That's a good question. I'm clueless.
Yeah. You know what I think what the veteran community has found is staying plugged in and talking about it. You know?
That's exactly what you have.
And that's what we have done, and that, you know, you stay plugged in to your, you know, to your guys, and you talk to them, and you can tell when something ain't right. And you pick up the phone and call, or somebody goes and sees them, and you help. I don't know if there is something different or unique about being a celebrity, and feeling alone, and you can't, you know, you're this public persona, so you're not supposed to have issues or anything like that. Maybe that's its own special genre of it, but it's just, you know, from Robin Williams to the different people that you see, that take their lives, and like anybody else, they're human beings, but whether they feel more alone and they can't reveal these things or whatnot is probably part of why they ultimately take their own lives. But again, this week twice, celebrities doing that. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about Anthony Bourdain. Do you have a favorite, thing that he turned you on to? A favorite aspect of cooking that he opened up for you? How did he influence you?
Well, he was just such a presence in the kitchen and how he flowed with everybody, and how it's a team effort when you're cooking. And I've always called it the dance because, you know, it takes so many components of people doing so many different things to pull out off one meal. And watching him in his shows and his writings and stuff just confirmed the fact that, you know, whatever he did, he had to have health, and I've always felt that, and it just personified it for me, but he was, he was an improv cook too, and I think, you know, what are we going to do to change the flow? I really learned from watching him cooking how he handled himself in the kitchen and communicated with the rest of the crew.
But, you know, again, it's kind of go back to the mental health piece. You know, you become part of a kitchen crew, but you're part of a team that, you know, and there's customers on the other side of that, what do you call where you put all the dishes up on? What do you call that area?
The window.
Yeah, on the other side of that window are the people that are either going to come back and pay us again or are not going to come back. And that's the gig. Yeah. And then behind that window, this is a team event here that we're fighting every night. And so, to me, if you get your feelings hurt, then you don't belong here. Go off and go to Walden's Pond and paint paintings or something. But, you know, again, if you can't stand to get your ass chewed because you're screwed up and you don't have it in you to come back and work harder and get your shit right, whether you're making salads or washing dishes or you're on the grill line or whatever you're doing, then come on, that's how you become successful. So I think it's just life, right? If the process of becoming good at what you do is not too many of us get accolades from the time we start working. Like, oh, Matt, you're so great. We're so fortunate to have you. Oh, my God. Yeah. Just do whatever. We just show up and just do whatever, man. We love it. That's not really the way life works. So,
well,
I don't know.
I remember when your son started working for me. And I would get under Johnny's chin about drying silverware and polishing glasses, wine glasses. That's not an easy thing to do. And if they're delicate and very expensive, and so when you're spinning the towel, if you don't do it right, it'll break off. And I've had people, I've had to take them to emergency room and have 10, 15 stitches because they cut it on the glass they were cleaning too roughly. Or I'd explain to them, now, when a customer sits down and picks up a fork at the place setting, and there's gunga in the tangs, you know, some food particle that was caught, and I said, you ruined their whole meal. And he picked up on it. And he was, because you trained him,
he could take an ass chewing. I'll say that for him.
Yeah, so was I. So was I. And maybe I couldn't do it today because I'm not a touchy-feely guy. I am, for sure. But when it comes to learning a job, I tell people one or two times, and then I got under their chin. And Richie West, you know, he was with me the longest. He came to work for me out of high school. Now he's one of the owners of the restaurant. And he started washing dishes. He washed dishes for 2 years before I put him up to busing. And when I did, all the servers complained. He's too slow, yada, yada. And I said, are you shitting me? I tell him once, and it's done. And it was every stage of his job, through dishes to ownership. He managed the bar when we came to the New Sanders after the flood. He asked me if he could be the bar manager and run the bar, and I said, absolutely. Read up, do some, and I taught him everything I knew, and he knows so many drinks. He's one of the best bartenders in three states. And, it's just, but, you know, people who listen and make an effort to learn, those are the ones I wanted around me.
Right.
And those were the ones that were part of the team that made things work. And I had no qualms about firing somebody who, wasn't pulling their weight.
Yeah, you know what? If you're going to be successful and you, everybody can't do it. You know, and I had the saying, if you're trying, I'm helping, but don't piss down my back and tell me it's raining. And so when I got to tell you for the third time and you make your third excuse why you couldn't follow what I told you the first and then the second time, like,
yeah,
I don't need you. I don't need you because this is not daycare, man. This is a J-O-B. And there's a reason why we call it work and not play. You're expected to come in here and work. And if you can't function in this, and again, I mean, then you, it ain't hard, man. It ain't hard. Most of the time you yep. break stuff down for people, you know, and it's imminently doable. If you pay attention and you do what I tell you to. But you know, Kim, you have people to show up for work. And they're new?
Yeah.
And they're new? Did you bring a notebook? Did you bring anything to write down things that you get told?
Joe Hansen.
No.
Who is now one of the owners and chef at the New Sanders. He came in, started with me at Lola's. It was an Italian joint I started. And he was following me around, and I was making a dish for bruschetta, and it's chopped tomatoes, and I had a whole bunch, I had a dozen ingredients, and so I'm showing him how to do it, and I says, where's your notebook? Why aren't you writing this down? I got it. So he came in the next day, and I hid, because we made enough for about 3 or 4 days. And I hid it in the container, and I said, Joe, make some bruschetta mix. And he said, I thought we made it yesterday. No, we ran out last night. Why don't you just whip it up for me? And he screwed it up so effing much. He only had one cheek when he left work that night, because I chewed the other one off. I'm telling you, and that happened to him, me under his chin, until he started writing everything down, and which was about 3-4 days.
Right.
And then when we moved to the New Sanders, I says, where's your notebook? And he pulled it out of his back pocket.
There you go. But you know what? All you're doing is you're teaching, just like in sports, you're teaching life lessons and all these different ways that we grow up as people, you know. And when you insulate people, when parents insulate kids from consequences, you don't do them any favors. All you do is you delay them learning a pretty significant lesson in life. When you go and argue for their grade at school, You don't make them accountable, and you don't teach them, hey, look, I don't care why you got a C. All I know is that's what they think. I'm not going down there to argue with anybody. You get your ass in gear. You find out what you're supposed to do, and you get that grade up because you're capable of more. Now, I say that because I got that lecture a lot as a kid because I didn't give a shit about school, and I was a pretty smart and good student. I was when I wanted to be. But if I didn't like science, give me a break. Like what? I hated science. Geometry, I hated geometry. Okay.
I failed geometry in prep school 1 year, and I had to go to summer school. And I said, come on, man, It's my, I play ball in the summer. No, you're not. You're going to summer school. Or you're not going to go back to Solberg.
Whoa.
And I'm, okay. Whoops.
Whoa.
So I, 3 days a week, I had a private tutor. And, the next year I did, B's and A minuses in geometry.
I hated that shit. I hated it. It's why I hated accounting too. It's like all these rules, like, okay, geometry. Yeah. It's all these rules about figures. Like, I don't give a shit about that. Now, if they wanted to teach me geometry, they should have used, like, if you take a square and you put it on its pointy end, it becomes a baseball diamond. Okay? What is the rate of speed that A gets to B before a ground ball hit to C can get to B? I would have figured that shit out. I'd have been all over it. But they didn't know how to teach me. So it's not really my fault. It's their fault, right? It's the education system's fault. Now we're talking about the Chef's Joints.
One last thing about the business. And I always preach to this at group meetings, which we had once a month. And I said, look, I'm only as good as my crew. And you guys fuck up, then it reflects on me. And you're the ones that make or break this to me. And that got through to me. But, life is not always easy. You've got to bust your ass for it.
Let me read you an email. Mac, I've dealt with suicide twice in the last 5 years, and it is one of the hardest things to deal with for the reasons that you cited. There is so much awareness out there. There are so many programs and so many people to help in a non-judgmental way.
Yeah.
But I think what we all have to come to grips with is some people go into dark places and don't see those things as alternatives anymore. And for people that are that broke, unless something incredible happens to change it, there's nothing you can do. And I've sadly had to accept that. I've thought long and hard about suicide. But think of a guy like Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah.
He's a brilliant guy. He is at the top of the mountain relative to his profession.
Yep.
In fact, you can argue that he's higher than the top of the mountain in his profession because of his TV show and his status in the world as an expert for all foodies to listen to.
Yes. And he was a writer.
Hold on, let me finish. But he was broken. Something deep inside of him was broken.
Yes.
You don't get there just having a tough time. You get there because you're broken inside and you see no hope and you cannot carry on. I've heard you talk about your sister, and your sister must be one of the strongest people in the world to live with what she lives with. These people, most of them, have not come close in their life to experiencing what she has, but for whatever reason, they're structurally flawed, and I say that with no malice at all, but they just have a structural flaw inside of them.
Yeah.
That doesn't allow them to deal with these things, and ultimately their solution is to take their own life. It is one of the saddest things I've ever experienced in my life, because what is left behind, the guilt others feel, the emptiness that they feel that they couldn't help, but ultimately it is something that they choose because they can't help themselves. It's really hard for those of us left here. I enjoy your program. Please give the chef my best, because it sounds like he lost a friend.
Yeah, a couple of them.
Yeah, you know, but you know what? That I think that's the hardest thing to live with is there is so much awareness, there is so much help out there, and when somebody chooses to turn not to embrace any of that, you do that because there is a deep structural flaw somewhere in there. I would tell you that most of my friends would say, I had an interesting conversation with somebody from Vietnam, and the subject of suicide came up.
Yeah.
And we're sitting around talking, and he said something that got my attention, and that was, you know, the guys that I know that killed themselves didn't kill themselves over what they saw in Vietnam. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, you know, a lot of them had issues before they went, you know. And when you think about their issues, it stemmed from something that was, you know, something that was wrong inside of them, right?
Yeah.
And then you pile all the rest of this stuff on. And it really got my attention because it's something I've said a similar version to that. In that, you know, why does there's some people that take their own lives because they're physically damaged, and I understand that, right? But others who aren't physically damaged, you know, with so much help, why? And then you go back and you pull the string. And it's like, oh, they've been living with this since they were little, and they've struggled with this since they were little, and for them it was hopeless, And although we can have a different opinion, that's not the prism that that's when they look through their prism, that's not what they saw. And I think that's hard. But again, why it's growing, given all the awareness and, you know, how much we care about people's feelings, that's to me a pretty interesting question. Why does that number continue to rise, given how much we discuss, how much we care about your feelings? And it continues to get bigger. So, I don't know. All right. I don't think you answered the question, how did Bourdain, other than the way you interact in the kitchen, in terms of culinary shit, how did he impact you in any way relative to food that he introduced you to or things that you now love and that he opened the door to for you that you can think of?
Well, one of them was cooking French fries in duck fat. How about that? And I did that at Sanders. Also his knife skills, the way he boned things. And so I bought a book about boning and breaking down certain cuts of meat, just how to make a sauce, like a hollandaise sauce, the right way, I love making hollandaise sauce. I did béarnaise, but that was, I couldn't make that much béarnaise at one time. So I got I did equally as well, but sauces and experimenting with compound butters. He introduced me to that. I just found that fascinating, that herb would be great. And, his whole style of cooking and techniques and not shortcuts, but just watching him work in a kitchen, but his sauces were great and his compound butters were great. And I started using those a lot, but, I had already been doing so, but not as adventuresome as when he came in to the scene when I started reading his stuff. But yeah, I liked his, I liked his style, the way he treated people and talked to people and, how he controlled the kitchen.
Okay. I've got an email for you. Mac, let me rescue the program and ask a grilling question. I am a fan of bone-in ribeye roasts. Is there any trick other than indirect heat that I should use if I'm going to grill it? My thoughts are that I will go ahead and sear it and then move it to indirect heat and use the digital meat thermometer, and it ought to come out perfect. Is there anything else I ought to be thinking about doing a bone-in ribeye roast on a grill?
Absolutely, that's great. But one of the things I would do, it depends on how many bones you have in a rib roast. It could be as many as 8 bones for a prime rib roast. And after you grill it, and what I would, one of the things you can do is, I used to work in a restaurant, and, we did all our prime ribs and then with the bone in.
Right.
And you have to have the bone down when you're done, scoring it and browning it. And when you're doing the indirect heat, the bones have to be down so the fat runs through the meat and tenderizes it and makes it juicy. But if you want, when you take that off the rack, the grill, and you let it rest, and you want to cut along the bone and cut away the prime rib, and then you have this rack of beef ribs. And let me tell you, a barbecued beef rib, they're almost impossible to find in the market. But if you do one that size, then you have the prime rib for serving, but then you have those ribs that you can set aside, don't let anybody chomp on them, and then you can barbecue them. I mean, you lather them with sauce, and then you grill them off, or you can cut them into portions. You know, each rib, they're Brontosaurus ribs, and then coat it in your barbecue sauce, and then put it on the hill on the grill. On the grill. That's a tip that you might want to think about.
Okay. All right. But
he's doing it right. So, and it's up to him how he seasons it. Personally, when I do that roast, I like to lather it up with garlic puree. I mean, lather it. and along with whatever else you put on.
So when you say lather it, the first thing that comes to my mind is, well, if you put too much, it's not going to be good. But I'm thinking about that because it's a roast. You know, everybody's going to get a small fraction of that, and only a small piece of the skin. So don't be afraid to lather it.
Yeah, because that garlic flavor seeps down into the skin. Now, if you want to do it another way, you take a paring knife and you take a clove of garlic, cut it in half, and then you make these slits into your roast. And you can do this with any roast, and lamb or beef. And then you stick your garlic clove down inside that cut as far as it'll go. And that will also serve the same purpose. And then when somebody cuts a piece, there might be a little sliver of garlic in there. Who knows? But that's another way to flavor it. And I would recommend that. But and if you're going to brown it, you strip that, meat on the grill, before you flip it over a bone side down. If you have too much garlic, sometimes it'll come off on the grill and that'll burn off. But if you cut slits into the lamb rib or the roast and, lard it, it's called larding. And you lard it with garlic cloves, and it depends on how much garlic you like, but you can put, half a dozen to a dozen cloves in a big roast, and you randomly do your cuts in the larger portions of the, it could be on the top through the fat, it could be on the side and the end, and you stick that in. And that'll flavor the roast from the inside. That's something we never talked about.
The I've got an email here about suicide. It says the following. I think relative to the subject of suicide, one of the things that we don't like to do is assign blame. Because the person has taken their own life. One of the things I've had to accept relative to suicide is that this is something that they chose. And it's not on anybody else other than the person that chooses it. Life doesn't always deal us the same cards. And we handle it differently. There is, and is in caps, so much help out there. There are, again, all caps, so many people out there that will help you. At the end of the day, I believe the toughest thing is accepting that somebody decided to take their own life and turn their back on all of that help. But as you said, we're all different. We struggle in different ways. And some people can't continue to struggle, and they choose not to accept any help. I believe until you can accept that, you can't accept suicide. But I am also curious, Mac, you made an interesting point. Why is this phenomenon increasing in our society when there is so much discussion of it, when there is so much discussion about your feelings, when there is so much help out there? That's an interesting question, and I don't know of an answer. I will keep my eyes open. Appreciate the discussion this morning. Always enjoy the frank way that All Marine Radio deals with this kind of stuff. But again, it's so hard when you get a phone call or something and you can't understand it and you're empty because you would have done anything to help. And yet they chose not to reach out, and accepting that as a choice and saying, hey, that's what they wanted is not really what they do. We choose to do. So anyway, another cooking email. Mac, I'm curious if the chef has a favorite kind of wood chip or something that he puts when he does either smoke or slow cook something. Do you do that? Do you put, you know, the wood chips in water and put the pan, you know, is that how they do it? How does that, however the hell they do it. Do you do any of that?
Yes. Yes, I do. I have a little container underneath my grill. And you have to soak your chips for at least a half an hour. Then you drain the water, and then you put it under. But my favorite wood is cherry wood or apple wood. Apple wood's a lot easier to get.
And what will you use those for? I mean, so what dishes do you tend to use it for?
Smoking ribs. I love apple wood. It's a hard wood, and I used to get the prunings from the apple orchards when I lived in Washington State, and I had a guy who'd throw it in his wood chopper, a logger friend, and I'd have all these wood chips. And I have a year's supply in one trip. I take them to wood. But my very favorite wood to use, and I couldn't get it here, but we used it in Italy, was olive wood. When they prune the trees, you collect all that. Mama Lola used to collect all that, and she cut it up, and then that's all we burned was olive wood. And that makes a great pie.
I've never heard of
it. Yeah, from olive trees, you know.
Yeah.
The olive trees in Europe, Italy, Spain, France.
The house that we moved into when I went to high school was built in an olive orchard.
Oh, lucky you.
Oh, no, it was a nightmare. Olives everywhere, right? Yeah. I'm out there raking olives always. Kathleen with her foot up my ass. Like, Michael, you need to rake the olives. Like, Mom, there's so many of them. Okay, why are we doing this? And, you know, there was a couple times that, you know, a Greek guy would come by and he would say, you know, can I put my tarp on your lawn and take, you know, and shake your tree and, you know, and take the olives? He's like, yes, 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 please do it. Get them out of here, because it was horrible. Olives everywhere. And, olive trees.
Well, I discovered olive oil in Italy, of course, but what we have now in California is some of the best olive oil going. It's absolutely spectacular, and that's what I use for all my salads and stuff at Sanders.
Explain the significance, because I didn't know this. Relative to California olive oil, California actually has laws in place, regulations in place relative to labeling of olive oil that a lot of states don't. So when you buy California olive oil, and it has certain labels, you're assured that it has certain ingredients in it. Yes?
Yes. The certain amount of, olives, and what type of olive it is. And whether it's the first pressing, which means extra virgin olive oil, or the second pressing, they can sell as olive oil. But extra virgin is the one that's cold pressed, and it's the very first pressing, and then they press them again, and then again. And they get, and we used to fry with pomace oil, which is the third pressing, and it's heated to extract the whatever oils are left. And it has an olive oil flavor, but the first pressing, extra virgin, and it has a kind of a peppery It depends on where it's grown and what type of olive, but, yeah, I love the California olive oil, but yes, in Italy, it's a lot of local, but now when you buy olive oil from Italy, about 40% of it is kind of counterfeit. It's not the real deal, you know.
All right.
Yeah. So if you want olive oil, California olive oil is a good one to buy on a regular basis. They sell a great one in Walmart that is the same one we get, that I bought, and it comes in little half-gallon plastic bottles. And olive oil has about a year and a half shelf life, and then it starts to go bad. But when you open an olive oil, you keep it in a cupboard, cool and dark. You don't sit olive oil in the sun ever, unless it's out on the counter and you're cooking with it or making a salad with it.
Well, hello, who the hell does that? Who stores any food in the sun?
Well, there's a lot of idiots that sit olive oil out on the counter under lights and or in the sun. It just, I'm just telling
you. Okay.
I've had salads at people's houses and I don't say a word. And then I look over and I look, where the hell's the olive oil? And it's sitting out on the counter underneath the counter, but it's under direct light, you know, those counter lights. I go, oh, okay, I get it. I wonder how old this is, you know. So when you're buying olive oil, look at the expiration date and please do that. And look at the color. Make sure it's a dark green, not a light green. That means it's not the first pressing or the second pressing. You know, it looks like vegetable oil. Those things are, pay attention to. And, keep it in the shade, in the shadows.
You know, on the monitor, Charles Krauthammer, who's written for the Washington Post for a long time. They just put up a letter that said he's been fighting cancer for the last year and said as recently as a month ago that it was gone, but it has come back, and it's an aggressive form of cancer. His doctors have told him that he has only weeks to live. And he's written this unbelievably gracious letter thanking people that have sustained me through these difficult months, and all of my partners at the Washington Post, Fox News, and Crown Publishing. Lastly, I thank my colleagues, my readers, and my viewers who have made my career possible and have given consequence to my life's work. I believe that the pursuit of truth, my doctor told me the best estimate is I have only a few weeks to live. This is the final verdict. My fight is over. I wish to thank my doctors and caregivers whose efforts have been magnificent, my dear friends who have given me a lifetime of support and sustained me through these difficult months, and all of my partners at the Washington Post, Fox News, Crown Publishing. Lastly, I want to thank my colleagues, my readers, and viewers who have made my career possible and given consequence to my life's work. I believe that the pursuit of truth and the right ideas through honest debate and rigorous argument is a noble undertaking. I'm grateful to have played a small role in the conversations that have helped guide this extraordinary nation's destiny. I leave this life with no regrets. It was a wonderful life, full and complete with the great loves and great endeavors that make life worth living. I am sad to leave, but I leave with the knowledge that I've lived the life that I intended.
That's beautiful. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's holy shit, man. Holy shit. So anyway. All right, on this day, this day that kind of sucks, Kim, thanks for thanks for coming on and being part of the program. And
thanks for having me. And look, I promise everyone we'll talk food. I'm a little rock. So I will see you next week.
All right, bud. Have a good one. Thanks.
You too.
All right. There you have it, the chef on a shitty Friday. The Gunner's going to join us next. We'll talk to him. More of Almarin Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.